Now, it is my great pleasure and honor to introduce someone who's done more work on behalf of Latinos and Wisconsinites than any other activist I can think of. Founding director of Voces de la Frontera, a powerful voice for justice for low-wage workers, immigrants, and youth, and an inspiring leader of one of the most important civil rights and progressive movements in the country, Christine Newman Ortiz.
It's such a treat to be here with all of you for the kickoff of Fighting Bob Fest again. And as has been said, this is a great opportunity to recharge and to reflect where we at now in the movement for social justice and to really connect with each other and prepare for the fight ahead. And we know very, very much so that in the next 50 or so days in the lead up to November 6th, it's going to be a critical time. And it won't just be decided on November 6th, but it's really what comes before November 6th, on November 6th, and what follows November 6th. In the immigrant rights struggle, the need has never been greater to be able to arrest and redirect the politics in our state and in this country. Despite the chaos in the White House, Trump-appointed individuals such as Stephen Miller, Chris Kobach, Jeff Sessions, or former advisor Steve Bannon, who share his white nationalist ideology and organizational ties with far-right groups in the United States and abroad. And they have used their positions to wage a relentless and escalated war on immigrants, refugees, and people of color that are testing, and I'll say this again, they are testing the boundaries of our humanity, our compassion, and our empathy for others. Here in Wisconsin, we too are experiencing this escalated targeting and deportation of immigrants in courtrooms, around schools, in homes, and on dairy farms. The most recent attack that garnered national attention was the announcement by Jeff Sessions and the DHS secretary in April of their so-called policy of zero tolerance, which is to criminalize people who are fleeing conditions of extreme violence and danger to seek refuge here in the United States, in many cases to try to be reunited with a family member. They have not only criminalized them, an intentional policy of criminalization, but also intentionally separating the children from their family members to discourage them as an intentional strategy to discourage them and others to prevent them to come to the United States. The sight and the sound of children being torn from their parents' arms, being placed in cages, and reports of widespread abuse and disregard for their protection or location nationalized the immigrant rights movement and its core demand to fight against laws that forcibly separate families or deny them the ability to see a loved one, such as a parent or grandparent. Just recently, in Karnes County Civil Detention Center in Texas, ICE actually conducted a raid within that facility to again forcibly separate 16 fathers from their children who had been reunited. And the reason they did this is that the fathers were organizing a three-day peaceful hunger strike to bring back public attention to their plight and to try to win public support to force the U.S. government to free them. The fathers were put in isolation, and neither the children nor the fathers knew the whereabouts of each other. One of the fathers tried to commit suicide by hanging himself because he was told by an ICE agent that he would never see his children again. Again, because this story was able to break news, it did bring some public attention, enough to have those families reunited and some of them to be released, not out of compassion, but to try to break up their efforts to organize. Despite the willful violation of U.S. international human rights for asylum seekers, families continue to this day to be placed in detention. Asylum seekers are still being criminalized and deported. More families are being held in detention now than in the 1940s internment camps, with plans to expand internment camps. Most recently, the Trump administration is seeking to reinterpret the Florida settlement agreement administratively as an administrative rule change, which would allow children and families to be held for even longer periods of detention and strip important protections for children. This is nothing but diabolical, and it is a diabolical combination of white nationalism and corporate greed. More than 73%, of people being held in detention are being held in for-profit prisons. The 16 Fathers, where they did the raid, was a for-profit prison. The horror of this I would say, it is striking how things keep unfolding. However, the tremendous hope is that this has nationalized the struggle in a way it was not before, under the banner of keeping families together. And for immigrant rights organizations like Voces, we have made that connection with what's happening in our own communities, because it's not just happening on the border, it's happening in our communities. And if it weren't for organizations bringing this stuff to public light, it could be in the radar screen, and certainly the dominant narrative would be out there. And just to give you at least maybe three Wisconsin examples you may not all be familiar with, to give you a sense of what's happening. One is from right here in Dane County. We had Maria Portugal, who very, very bravely spoke out publicly in support with various organizations, the Dane County Sanctuary Coalition, to make public the fact that she was contacted, or not she, her immigration attorney, by ICE agents to threaten her that if she didn't find a way to get her estranged husband to turn himself in to ICE, they would detain and deport her and take her away from her kids. She is the mother and father of five children, and she is a U visa applicant. She is a survivor of domestic abuse, which is how she applied for this U visa, which means it's a path to being considered for adjustment of status, because you've worked with law enforcement to report a violent crime that happened to you. And so her coming out publicly to decry this, not just for herself, but for her family, showed tremendous courage, Franco Ferreira, his case is pending. He's from Argentina. The need for driver's licenses, restoring that right to immigrants here in Wisconsin, has never been greater. We're seeing that as the number one way ICE is targeting people for deportation. In his case, he had a driving without a license offense, because if you're undocumented, you cannot access it unless we change that at the state level. A day later, immigration shows up at his work. They show up at his home. When he, with an attorney, goes in to speak to them, because he had no record, in good faith, he went in to talk to them. He never came out and is in detention to this date. And he's someone who we're fighting to be reunited with his family. Something we've never seen before in the area of Racine, ICE is using their own vans to pull over and pick up people. We had 8 people picked up in 2 weeks. ICE agents, we are now seeing a resurgence of that, which we hadn't seen since 2013, in and around courtrooms in Walworth and Milwaukee, and reports of local collaboration. Just one came in 2 days ago through Facebook Messenger, someone from Portage County, where the sheriff has been, in what they suspect, in communication with ICE. So this is just a flavor of what's happening. And I want to highlight the fight back, because that's what we're here for. And there's actually so much to be energized. And in case you to get on the same page, I want to give you energy about the fight back. We had a tremendous victory in Milwaukee recently with the primary election, and with the election of Ernell Lucas as the Milwaukee County Sheriff. That's a huge victory for many people. And I just want to highlight that that's a chapter that has unfolded from a struggle that started last year in the wake of the Trump administration and his efforts to turn local law enforcement into an arm of immigration as part of his whole xenophobic, racist campaign of mass deportation. In that, Sheriff Clark said, here, we'll do it, we'll implement it here. There are tens of thousands of people turned out for two general strikes, Days Without Latinx and Immigrants, in February. It nationalized in February. It happened again in May, and in fact, it was a coordinated national effort in over 30 cities. And that's Wisconsin. And this was the next part. The next part was exposing Schmidt, the henchman, to Clark, who resigned in shame. And it was about building a coalition that linked the struggles against mass incarceration with the struggle for immigrant rights, that helped elect Ernell Lucas and drive Clark out of office. And Lucas has promised a policy of non-collaboration with immigration, that he will not share information or hold people for ICE unless there's a judge's warrant. So that is a win for the immigrant rights movement. The other big thing that I want to share with all of you, and of course we're going to have to continue with that struggle, very local types of struggles, but the other thing that I want to share with you that Voces de la Frontera is working on right now, Voces de la Frontera Action, I should say, our C4 arm, is that we are organizing a massive Latino Get Out, statewide Latino Get Out the Vote program, which we're calling Voceros por el Voto. Voceros? Yes, with the goal of reaching 48,000 Latinx voters. Yes. And it's different. It's a radical change from traditional organizing for elections, which has been working off voter files, phone banking, knocking on doors. You all have done this. But with the Latino community, it's not really the right fit. And we have the opportunity now. We've really made a fundamental shift and are doing and are trying out, working through our members as we've organized. Basically, it's about taking the Day Without Latinos and Immigrants approach, which we have always used for these mass general strikes, and shifting that to an electoral strategy, working through people you know, family, friends, neighbors, coworkers. And two big things that we're fighting for that people desperately need, and people are awake in a way they aren't, but they need information and they need to be organized. They need it, they want it, and this is what we're gonna do. But the biggest thing that we need is really, as a major protection, is to restore driver's licenses for immigrants. The other way we're doing this is calling it Driver's Licenses for All, as a campaign that we're starting now and asking all the candidates, where do you stand on this issue? And we're linking with not just Representative Samaripa, who's always is going to be reintroducing that bill in 2019 for immigrants, but also with Representative Crowley, around restoring rights for U.S. citizens who are poor, and these are also disproportionately African American and Latino, who, because of poverty, are unable to pay fines, which would they end up suspending their driver's license, or for non-driving offenses such as possession of marijuana, it ends up suspending their license, and they're locked into a cycle of poverty and also face jail time. So it's about continuing to link our struggles in common cause. The other thing that I think is important to note is that engaging the Latinx and immigrant families is not just important for them, but it's important for all of us. It's part of the progressive family here in Wisconsin that is necessary to win. As all of you are necessary, they are necessary to win. For any statewide race, in key state and assembly districts, and demographically, it's a growing population, and it must be part of this progressive voting bloc. To give you an idea, the millennial population, which is considered 18 to 33 years of age, I'd be curious if people guess what this is. What do you think that Latino population is of all millennials in Wisconsin? How much? 25%? It's actually 44%. Isn't that shocking? That's a demographic that needs to be organized and wants to be organized. What I'm here tonight to ask for all of you is a little bit of support. a little bit of support in that as we do this work in the lead up to the elections, we have to set our priorities. And as we set those priorities with those elected officials or candidates for office, I ask you to really support, hold people to champion driver license restoration as a top priority in 2019. And nationally, to also hold U.S. Senator Baldwin, to really encourage her to become a champion for the immigrant and refugee rights movement in the Not $1 More campaign. Because the Trump administration, while legislatively they've been unable to move these horrible bills that they want to move desperately, they have been moving money. They've been moving money administratively through these budget DHS appropriations bills, through these continuing resolutions. And most recently, in the media, we've all seen how they've been taking money from FEMA, the Coast Guard, up to $202 million to fuel this campaign of hate to persecute immigrants and refugees in these mass deportation. So I encourage you to do that because we can't accept the argument of simply voting for a lesser of two evils. That's what got us into this mess. It only pulls the whole conversation, the whole discussion, the goals and the aspirations farther and farther to the right. We need candidates that are going to champion our cause, and our families and communities deserve it. And frankly, it's not just the right thing to do, but it's the winning strategy. Later on in the program, you're going to hear from Randy Brice. I'm so fucking proud of Randy Brice, who participated on March 5th in a civil disobedience action with us in support of Dreamers in Racine. Representative Mark Pocan, who was up here earlier, unapologetically supports the demand to abolish ICE and replace it with institutions that integrate and uphold the value that immigrants and their families make to our state. And though Tony Evers can't be here tonight, it will, of course, matter very much who is there. And in his role as state superintendent, for those that don't know, he formally encouraged school districts to pass safe school zones to protect immigrant students or their parents from ICE harassment and detention. Trump, I'm always inspired by the fact that Trump didn't really win Wisconsin with more voters. It's that our folks didn't turn out, especially Latino, Black, and youth. This time, people are awake in a way they weren't before, but the way to win is to inspire the base with championing what we need. We need that. We need to make those demands going into the election, and we need to be organized to fight for it post-2019. Sí se puede.
And coming up next Tuesday, or Wednesday, I guess it is, there's an event to benefit that drive for voter registration and getting out the vote in the Latino community. There's some flyers out in the lobby. The local Madison chapter of Voces de la Frontera, there's an organizer here in Madison, and the Sheree Shemayim, the Jewish Reconstructionist community here in Madison, has done a lot of work to raise funds to fund that position. So I think a hand goes out to them as well. So, you know, there's an old story about putting the frog in the pot of water, and the temperature gets turned up on the water, and the frog doesn't notice that he's being cooked, he or she is being cooked inside that pot of water. But there's another version of that story as well. There's two frogs in the pot of water. And one of the things about frogs is, you know, they can't talk to each other when they're under the water. So they've got to put their heads up. So they put their heads up out of the water, and the one frog says to the other one, "How do we know when the water's getting hot?" And the other frog says, "Well, we put our heads up out of the water and we look at the way things used to be and we realize what's going on all around us." That, I think, speaks to what's happening to our climate today. We see it in Wisconsin. We see it with the hurricane that's hitting the coast of the Carolinas right now. We see it in so many different ways. And our environment really is all about the future of our lives, our children's lives, our grandchildren's lives. And, you know, they say all politics is local, so I went to my own neighborhood and invited my neighbor from down the street. I want to give a warm welcome to a lifetime activist for the environment, both as an attorney and as an activist with Midwest Environmental Advocates. Give a warm welcome to Kim Wright.
Thanks for all of you are doing, really important. I'd say I have to take a minute. What I'm gonna talk about are people using their rights, and I think what we just heard, we all have a real duty to fully embrace the rights we have and not let them be trampled on. So this is a crowd that is gonna, I'm gonna start off talking about the original Earth Day. And the reason I'm doing this is there's a Midwest Environmental Advocates is just about ready to turn 20. And we had this wonderful volunteer that I was having a conversation with, just talking about my experience over 30 years working for conservation and environmental protection. And she's a really smart young woman who's a leader now and will be a great leader as she moves forward. And we both realized how important it was to share those stories and to remember who we are, what we have here in Wisconsin especially. We have a wonderful, amazing conservation history, and the people of the state have a great conservation ethic, and it really crosses all boundaries. So one of the things she was kind of surprised about, of course she knows who Gaylord Nelson is, she knew what Earth Day was, but it's a really great example of the power of people standing together and how much we can do, and that we are more powerful than any dirty money or anything anywhere when we stand together. So I know the demographic in this room probably knows a lot of this, but on that first Earth Day in 1970, 20 million people stood up together on the same day and said, enough is enough. And it was so much public outcry that the Congress couldn't ignore it. So that's when the National Environmental Protection Act was passed, that's when the Clean Water Act was passed, the Clean Air Act, and it's really because a lot of different kinds of people stood together and said, you know, we can't let you poison our future. And the other thing, I don't know, how many people here have read the infamous Powell memo? Anybody, many people know that? So this is, I think, a compliment to all of us that work so hard together and are so powerful. Right at the heels of that Earth Day, with all of the promulgation of all of these important laws we still use today, there was a memo written by Lewis Powell Jr., who then was the head of the National Chamber of Commerce. And it's kind of quaint if you look at it online. It's written on a typewriter, but it's a game plan for corporate lobbying as we know it today. And actually, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, was founded in response to all of the people that stood up for our environmental rights. So I take that as a compliment in many ways, how scary we can be to these people. One of the great things that came out of all of those people being the impetus for these laws and these rights is Congress included significant rights for all of us, for citizens, in these laws. And it's for times like these, when our legislative and executive branches of government, now at the federal and our state level, are failing, beyond failing. Citizens actually can act like private attorneys general and step in and protect our futures, protect our clean water, protect our health when our government can't or won't. And I hope we're saying the same thing someday about the people that would like to join us in citizenship here. So one of the things that was really inspiring to me about Governor Nelson, Gaylord Nelson, in his Earth Day of founding and organizing, was his real ethic was people should show up in any way that's meaningful to them. They didn't have talking points. There wasn't a script. It wasn't all orchestrated by one, you know, overeducated person somewhere. And in my work, I get to see that a lot. So I just want to share. I wish I could do little holograms or something from the people I work with around the state. And I just want to share some of those stories and just give you some ideas about some of the things that are happening. So one of the, and just to echo a lot of our speakers, the important, it's great. We need to elect people that are different than some of the people that are there, but that's just the first step. One of the worst policies for water in the history of our state was passed by a democratically controlled legislature and governor, and that was taking the control away from local communities over the siting of these giant industrial livestock operations. And if you haven't seen or known what these are, I'll try to give you a little scale. So one of these facilities can produce 100 million gallons, and it's liquid manure, but it's not manure. They hold them in these really vast pits that are allowed to leak 500 gallons a day, and that's okay. But these giant pits that have, they're able to take waste products that aren't, don't have to be, they have to be, they, I, sorry, I didn't know if I could hear that. So there's, they have to, it's really scary stuff, and it's got their MRSA and, all kinds of pathogens in this stuff. And it's just spread on the ground. So it's really important. There are people fighting really hard there's a lot less legal hook because of that law. It's very repressive, but people are doing it anyway. And I just want to talk again, I can't see you very well, but I hope some of you have heard about the people in Kewaunee County. It's just south of Door County, and it's a place where there's karst, where there's very thin soils over fractured bedrock. And so it's hours, not days or weeks or months, when something on the surface can hit the groundwater. And Midwest Environmental Advocates has been working with citizens for more than 15 years there, and it's still a public health crisis. And citizens are having to sue their own government just for very modest protections, but they're doing it. And one thing for me, there's a case we've been working on for 7 years. A lot of it's a lot like politics and money and politics. So this group of people who haven't been able to drink their water for about 10 years, the neighbors, finally we were able to represent them in a challenge to a permit that allowed one of the owners of one of these giant, animal factories, double his herd to over 8,000 animals, and that just one facility creates the waste of 184,000 people a year, and that's just spread on the ground, and there isn't any monitoring of how many gallons per acre, and so, it's way beyond any carrying capacity. But long story short, we were able to win a very modest judgment where these people couldn't drink their water. And so the judge ordered groundwater monitoring so that you actually had better information about the impact of this particular operator on the community. We are now in year 7 in that legal battle, and the industry group has spent $3 million fighting a $15,000 groundwater monitoring project. So, but the great news is that Kewaunee County has been such an egregious public health crisis that somewhere in there, the conversation changed. And it used to be that one community were talked about as suburbanites who just didn't like farming. And if you've ever been near one of these things, just the smell alone, people can't open their windows, they can't hang things outside. I know people up in both Kewaunee County and Door County that have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in their B&B tourism kinds of businesses, because who's going to go there? Even their loyal clients would call and say, what's it like, you know, and you can't swim on the beaches because they're full of algae from this manure running off. So when we started working on this particular case, there were about 10 people. Now there are hundreds and hundreds of people, but the really great thing of Kewaunee County changing the discussion is all of these other communities, it's really clear this is a statewide systemic issue, and it really does. This exponential growth in these facilities comes out of that law that took local control away. So it's important, and we need to make sure that if there's the same faces or new faces in state offices, we need to fix it. But now there's hundreds and hundreds of people, but the really great thing is people got together, and there's now 18 communities that are fighting for accountability for these giant factory farms, and they're joined together in an umbrella group. So it's not just one community at a time, these 18 communities, and it's called Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. And so we provide legal assistance to them. It's all run by these amazing volunteers. So all of these different communities are fighting similar issues, don't have to reinvent the wheel. Local ordinances are really tricky because the state law limits them, but there are ways to do it. So now we have an ordinance, file cabinet, electronic file cabinet. Communities can share what their strategies, you know, when they've had success. But one of the really important things is they can support each other emotionally, because they not only have to live with this, these are ordinary people who have jobs and kids and mow the yard and do the laundry, and then they take on these huge, powerful interests, and they don't get a day off. You know, they're doing it every day. Our staff works very hard, but, you know, I get to go home at the end of the day. So I guess one thing I can say from our previous speaker is, again, we do have rights, and I just feel so lucky that I get to bring the power of the law to people who are willing to stand up for their rights. And environmental law is really pretty different in that regard, where it's very technical and there's, you know, it's fairly objective, evidence-based work, and citizens' rights are really well spelled out. Of course, these days, we've literally sued a Koch Brothers paper mill in Green Bay, so citizens need lawyers and engineers. This is right after Justice Prosser had received about $600,000 from Americans for Prosperity, and we ended up in the Supreme Court in that case, and Justice Prosser did not recuse himself, but in law you want to make wins out of losses, and we were able, the Supreme Court got that law really wrong and took the venue away from most Wisconsin citizens to challenge water pollution permits. So this leads into another really inspiring time for me, it's an inspiring story. So out of that, Midwest Environmental Advocates is a real government watchdog. I've lived most of my career in the administrative side of things. You know, a lot of people work on passing laws, but if we don't implement them and enforce them, you know, you've kind of doesn't really matter. So we had been watchdogging the Clean Water Act programs in Wisconsin for 10 years, and Wisconsin used to be one of the leaders in the nation. But when we lost the public intervener and lost an independent secretary, DNR really went downhill. And so we really carefully documented these technical deficiencies. And finally, after litigation, including going to the Supreme Court on this Koch Brothers case, we didn't have anything left to do. So we filed a petition with the EPA called a Petition for Corrective Action, which on the behalf of 16 citizens statewide, I guess I need to say that what I'm proud of and feel so good about my work is we're the only public interest law center in Wisconsin, that environmental law center that provides legal services to citizens. And so, you know, there's more work than we can do. And if you heard me say that they've spent $3 million fighting a $15,000 groundwater monitoring plan, citizens just don't have the money. You need public interest lawyers. So anyway, when we filed this petition, which, you know, very clearly documented the failures in this program, we got over 50 calls from retired DNR staff saying, what can we do to help? And a common thing they said was, we just didn't know how bad it was. And so, you know, being those nerdy people that document how government actually functions is an important thing. But former Secretary, DNR Secretary George Meyer, who was really, in my mind, the last independent secretary, he and I had been working for about 4 years trying to capture all of this institutional knowledge that was leaving the DNR, and we just couldn't kind of get over the hump. We just couldn't bring them together. And after that petition was filed, showing how far we had fallen in our Clean Water Act programs when we really were a leader in the nation, we were able to kind of bring these people came together. They didn't want to see their legacy gone. And there's a new organization called Wisconsin's Green Fire. And they're over 300 members, and they're retired agency staff, they're academics, and they're really becoming this voice for science. You know, they're still wonderful, really good men and women in the DNR, but they're not allowed to speak. They're not allowed, in fact, science-based decisions are overruled by a political appointees at the head of the agency. So they're there, and if you know anyone in the DNR, you know, buy them a cup of coffee and tell them thanks and, you know, ask them to stay. But this Wisconsin's Green Fire, for me, is so quintessentially Wisconsin, where at our first annual meeting, all of these people stood up and said, well, I had 30 years in public service, and I thought my public service was done, but it's not. So those are the kinds of people that are really stepping up, and it's all over the state. I don't know any part of the state where there aren't people working for clean water, working together. Someone was talking about red communities, blue communities. There are people all over the state. Pipeline 61 that goes right down the middle of our state with tar sands. There are communities all up and down the line that have passed resolutions on safety issues and needing environmental impact statements. So the good news, I think, that I want you to know is there's a lot of horrible, I mean, government is not on our side now at the federal level either, but people are really standing up, and they're the little guy, and they're the, you know, really working hard. I just want to end here by just reading the words of a man named Arlen Christensen, who helped found the Public Intervenors Office, and he was a founder of Midwest Environmental Advocates. And these words are just really important because it reminds us we own the water and we don't need to give it up. So in closing here, the waters of Wisconsin belong to us, the people of Wisconsin. The state holds them in trust solely for our benefit. It is the state legislature's obligation to act as a trustee to preserve and improve the quality of our waters. The Department of Natural Resources has been delegated important responsibilities for implementing this obligation. Underlying every act of the legislature and the DNR is the fundamental fact that they act not as owners, but as trustees for the true owners, we the people. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Kim Wright.